The Black Scholars Podcast.
All right. No music needed. Just want to talk to you guys for a bit before we get into episode 4 of season 2. I just want to stop and say I appreciate you guys for continuing to download and listen to the content. I find so many people who support the show are part of the tribe that I don't know at all on social media, personally, professionally, but because we share this bond of being educators, you guys are purposely, intently looking out for your friends and colleagues and co-workers and nieces and nephews and whatnot who are entering their profession. I do want to make something clear. There is nothing wrong with having a long-lasting, fruitful career as an educator. Whether you choose to stay in the classroom or you take the traditional route toward becoming an assistant principal, then a principal, or if you decide to do something, you know, a bit different, maybe you start publishing books and becoming a world-renowned speaker, public speaker, and you speak about the success and failures that you've had. Many educators have done that before and done really well and still continuing to do well, and they're paid exorbitant fees for their speaking engagements, right? So that's always an option. Working for the school board, becoming a board member, starting your own charter school, starting your own Montessori school. Like, everything that I speak about is either my direct experience or I know someone personally who has done it, right? And because of this podcast, I've been able to connect with educators all over the country, even outside of the country, right? And that's been such a beautiful journey since 2018. We've been doing this thing, and we're going to keep going. I do want to clarify that one of the reasons why I don't publish as many episodes or with the consistency or with a regular schedule like I used to is because I'm very much a guinea pig in this thing. And so the focus of season 2 is about you and about leveling up. And that's what I've done, right? Because we know my story. Educator, taught for a couple of years, taught sped, left, came back, did a few things, started a business, worked for Apple, came back. Because this was, it was my time, right? Like, for me to fulfill my purpose and what I sought after in education. Had a lot of success in over 11 years, but always had this inkling to do something else. And now I'm doing something else. And there is a way to do things when you transition your career. And specifically for me in tech, and for anyone that's interested in tech. So the focus of season 2 is for us all to level up. All right, so let's get into episode 4, season 2, with the lovely Ryan Harris, who is trained and is working, I believe, in her second year. And ServiceNow. ServiceNow is very it's very IT based versus Salesforce is more of a CRM, customer client relationship management. So if you're trying to make a sale, if you're trying to encourage a donor to donate, then you would go with something like Salesforce. They have a billion other clouds that, you know, based on business needs is useful. But ServiceNow, I know they are starting to build out more, but right now their primary focus is still IT, at least last time I checked. But let's get into this episode. Hope you guys love it. BlackScholarsClothing.com. Love you guys. Give me something I can feel. Light a cigarette just so I can breathe. Give me something. still
okay. This is okay for your audio. Okay. Okay.
And audio is always on point. Yeah, you're good.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm a pro at this. I've been doing it for a while, so you're good. You're good. And just a little backstory. I started out teaching. I don't know how much you know about me. I know I gave you a little bit of information before about the show, but I started out teaching all the way back in like 2008, 2009. I left teaching, started my own business, worked for Apple. When I worked for Apple, they put me on their workshop team, which is basically like, usually it's older customers. When they buy an Apple product, they don't necessarily know how to use it to its fullest capacity. Mm-hmm. And so because of my background, they had me like literally kind of running that team and like trying to improve it. And so basically I was doing like education stuff, but for Apple. I was like, well, if I'm going to do that, I might as well just go back to working with the kids because I still love that. The kids wasn't why I left. So anyways, So I taught for 11 years. I resigned at the top of 2022. I started out as a data analyst. So that was my first tech job, but I made a mistake that I'm trying to warn everyone else not to do. I was so anxious to get out of the classroom. We're recording already, by the way. I got out of the classroom, or I was so anxious to get out of the classroom that I took probably, it might have been like my third company that I interviewed with, but it was the first official offer that I received, and I was just so happy that I got an offer, and they actually bumped up my pay, what I would have been paid, and they bumped up my title and made me a senior data analyst, even though I had never officially worked in tech before. I did a lot of data stuff, as most educators do, and I had some teacher leadership roles. So the podcast has been around since 2018. Before that, I did the Three Bearded Kings podcast in 2017, me and two of my best friends. That podcast is no more just because we're just busy with life. But even while that one was going, this one was born in 2018 and it's been going ever since. I don't get the chance to record episodes all the time because like other podcasts, and no shots fired at them, but I don't like recording if I don't have like good content to share out. If I feel like I'm just saying the same thing over and over again, and I'm just making content to make money, then I don't want to do it. I'm very purpose driven. And that's pretty much the targeted audience. It's like people are purpose driven. Some of them are educators. Some of them are not. But at the end of the day, I feel like everybody's a scholar. I do specifically speak to African Americans and Hispanic Americans and Native Americans, anybody black and brown, but it's open and available to any and everybody. But that's just my focus. That's I want to help my people.
So yeah. We're rooting for everybody black.
Yeah. So or enough brown. About that. Yeah. Enough about me and the podcast. I'm so glad to have you. And it is Ryan, right?
Yes.
Okay. Ryan. I just wanted to make sure because me and you, our communications strictly been on Twitter, and we don't get a chance to actually talk to somebody verbally. Sometimes you don't know because you know, like I don't even really put my name out there on Twitter. But I am Leonard Wilson. Nice to meet you. And you are in Nashville, my old stomping grounds.
Yes, I'm in Nashville. I'm actually gearing up to move at the end of this month.
Okay.
So we're going to Georgia. We're going to Atlanta. Well, outskirts of Atlanta, but yeah.
Okay. Now, where are you originally from?
I'm originally from Chicago.
Okay, so we have that in common as well. I'm not from Chicago. Chicago. I'm from Milwaukee. So we've got a Midwest to the South connection here. What actually brought you to Nashville?
You know, just my family life, personal life was really hectic.
Sure.
I don't know. It was just something like brewing in me that just wanted like a fresh start. Mm-hmm. And things had just were getting pretty bad for me up there. Sure, and I just felt like I needed to kind of get out of that environment.
Okay.
So I had a friend who was going to Fisk.
Shout out to Fisk.
And she was like, girl, I got a room if you want to come. So at the time I picked up me and my little dog and We came down to Murfreesboro. Actually,
okay.
I was in Murfreesboro first,
Yeah,
and
yeah.
then got my life together, stuff together, and now I'm in
Yeah.
Nashville. So,
Awesome. And so
yeah.
how's life in Nashville? I know you're leaving, but one thing I know about Nashville, and I got a bunch of friends that are still there, it's crowded. Like, it's super populated. Everybody was moving to Nashville. I don't know if everybody's still moving to Nashville because the cost of living has went up dramatically since actually before COVID, and it never really dropped. So I know you're leaving, but how is life in Nashville right now?
You definitely can notice a boom, and you know, the people who are here is definitely getting a little crowded. But it's cool. Like, Nashville is fun. I think for me, I just ready to experience something new. Nashville can be one speed, you know, sometimes. Like, there's a distinct culture in Nashville, and I feel like if you're not like if that doesn't call to you, sometimes you just kind of feel like you're not really connected to anything. At least for me, that's my experience. I just kind of feel like I'm not really connected to anything out here. Just wanting to be around a more diverse group of people. Like, we're, you know, brown, black folk, we're out there. We're definitely here, but I just want more, you know, so.
I get that. I get that. And to be honest with you, that's one of the reasons why I moved to Memphis is because although I love living in Nashville, and I did spend some time, I lived in Murfreesboro for a year. I was in Nashville for 4 years. But that's one of the reasons why I moved to Memphis is I wanted to be around more of, people who look like us, who thought like us. I can't necessarily say that's 100% true for Memphis, Tennessee, to be exact, because there's some goofies in my Chicago terminology. There's some goofies in Memphis, a lot of unnecessary violence, a lot of just people who don't take education or take their lives seriously. But I just try to be like a positive influence wherever I'm at. But I've got dreams and goals of moving. I don't know exactly where. I'm divorced, so I am a dad, so staying close as a dad, that's really important to me. But eventually I'm gonna have to figure that out because I'm ready to see some different things too. I've got California on my brain. I tweet about that sometimes a lot, especially like San Diego. That's like my favorite place in the world to be. But it's super expensive to live out there. And so now I'm in tech, but I'm also like still really new. I'm still really a novice. So I just know as my career continues to grow and progress, and my salary continues to grow and progress, and all the other, side hustles and investments I got going, then I think I'll be able to afford living out in California without much problem. So I just gotta be patient.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, being patient is the key to a lot of stuff because
For sure.
it could be the thing for you, but if you get your hands on it at the wrong time, you know, it
Yeah.
doesn't usually pan out the way it should. So,
Yeah, dope, dope, dope conversation already. So let's
yeah.
talk about tech. This is why I wanted you here. So, ladies and gents, welcome to the Black Scholars Podcast. And I've got Ryan with me. Ryan and I are friends on Twitter. We are part of Black Tech Twitter, Black Tech, Black Techies, whatever the hashtag is. We're a part of all of that. So, Ryan, you are officially a senior associate technical consultant. What is that? What is that? What do you do? What does your day-to-day look like? And I do know for sure that you are a part of the ServiceNow ecosystem. So could you break that down, what you actually do?
Absolutely. So, I work for a technical consulting company. So my main title is a technical consultant. I was lucky enough, blessed enough to get into one of their early career programs. So when I started off, I was just an associate technical consultant. So they really like poured a lot into us. They were really looking for people who were like career switchers or fresh out of school, you know, just didn't have a ton of experience, but knew their way around ServiceNow. So I got in that way. And now I'm 2 years in, and I got bumped up to senior associate technical consultant. So
Fire.
Still a baby, but we're in toddler zone now. So more so junior consultant at this point, but I specialize in ServiceNow. So within the company, you can be a technical consultant, but have different specialties, practices. And so I told them I was interested in ServiceNow. So they focus most of my development within the ServiceNow ecosystem.
Beautiful, beautiful. Few things there that you said I'd love to dive into. Now, you said you were fresh out of school. Is that correct?
So they were looking for people fresh out of school or a career switcher. I was a career switcher.
And what'd you do before?
So I was a veterinary technician before this. Wow. So I made a big, big switch.
Yeah. Big switch. And what motivated you to make that switch?
If I'm being honest, money, work-life balance, I kind of hit like rock bottom. Like, if anyone else is familiar with working in that field, it's intense. It's a lot of hours. It's intense. It can be draining, and you're just expected to give your all consistently all the time and give more than your all. And, you know, that was fine because I was passionate about it. Like at one point I did think my purpose on this earth was to take care of animals, and that's what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be a veterinarian initially, but, you know, it's just kind of what they say with everything. If you're constantly pouring into something and nothing's being poured back into you, and you're having to look here and look there for some type of replenishment, it gets old after a while. And so I just wasn't making enough money. And I was having to work like, you know, a second, third job just to pay like basic bills. So mm-hmm. I would work a 12-hour shift and then hop in my car and do like Uber Eats, you know, until 2 a.m. in the morning just to it's get crazy. Up and have to be back in the hospital at 7 a.m. And after a while, I was just like, I can't continue on like this. And I'm barely making enough money to cover like just life in general. I think I just started searching for something else out of desperation, because I felt myself at that point of like breaking, and I didn't necessarily know what I wanted to do. But you know, Twitter being Twitter, I just honestly, I don't know how like it all played together, besides it's just God, you know. I mean, no offense to anybody else and what they believe in, whatever higher power they believe in.
For sure.
But at the time, my brother was in the military, and they were offering the Google certificates. I don't know if anyone else is familiar with that, but Google does have on their platform where they offer free programs. Well, they don't advertise it as free, but you can sign up for their version of financial assistance, and you can get it for free. But he was doing it, and he was just telling me about it. And we originally wanted to get my younger brother into it because he was kind of, you know, just trying to figure out what he wanted to do. He's younger. And I kept looking at it, and I was like, maybe I should do it. Like, just so I can show him that he can do it.
Right.
Because it's just like an IT program. So Google IT, like just general information technology, like education, I guess. So I did it, and I was like, okay, well, this is interesting. And so on Twitter, I just started just following people who looked like me, who were in tech, to kind of figure out like, well, where in tech would I even see myself per se. And I got a shout out Asia AP on Twitter. I think, I don't remember her handle,
Asia AP.
Yes.
I'm not sure.
I'll find her handle.
Okay.
But I came across her Twitter, and she was talking about ServiceNow.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, she looks like me.
Right.
She talks like me. You know, let me see what it is that she's doing. Like, what is this ServiceNow thing? And she retweeted a, I guess, like push that ServiceNow was doing to get more people onto the platform. So they were offering free exam vouchers if you completed a, you know, their sysadmin course by a certain date. So I was like, Might as well do it. Did it. Ended up really enjoying ServiceNow. And at this point, I'm like still holding on to the dream of staying somewhere in the veterinary technology field. Because like up until that point, my entire life was geared towards going to vet school, being a veterinarian. And then when I realized I didn't want to go to vet school anymore, I kind of got trapped in the space of like being a vet tech. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I was like 1 foot in, 1 foot out kind of thing. So I would like get off work, and in between like doing deliveries, I would just kind of like log on and do a few things on my phone and stuff like that. And I think what really pushed me was kind of a letdown, which is crazy how letdowns will kind of like, you at the moment you're viewing it as a letdown, but it's really a door opening to kind of push you to where you need to go. But I had applied for a job through this company called IDEX. They basically manufacture, they do a lot of stuff, but my interest was the manufacturing of the machinery that we would use in the hospital. And I wanted the position of going around hospitals and educating people on how to use the machinery.
Okay.
So I applied for this job. I went through like 3 or 4 interviews and I was praying. I'm like, God, please let me get this job, because they were paying like $25 an hour. And at that time, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's the most money
I would ever make.
$25 an hour would change my life.
Right.
I got all the way to the end and I didn't get the job. And I was heartbroken, like sobbing, crying, just like, God, why are you punishing me like this? Like, I'm at my end point. I don't know what to do. That job would have been everything to me at that point. And after I kind of picked myself up off the ground and got done crying, I was like, okay, let me focus on tech. So I finished the Google IT program, and right, like I think literally 2 weeks after me not getting that job, that's when I saw Asia's post about ServiceNow. So I'm like, okay, let me do this like course or learning path, as I call it, and just see where it goes. So I did it, got my first certification, and that kind of sparked my interest in ServiceNow. And, you know, a few months later, I got my LinkedIn page together and a recruiter slid in my DMs, and it was my current job. And here I am 2 years later.
Fire. Yeah, thank you for walking us through that. You answered several questions I was going to ask you. So that's super dope to hear about your story. So just to clarify, ServiceNow's course or program, this is self-studied, self-directed, self-paced. This isn't a live course, correct?
No, so ServiceNow offers both, which I think initially what drew me to them, because I, at the time I kind of was interested in AWS and interested in ServiceNow. But ServiceNow has a platform, Now Learning. Everyone should go check it out if they are interested in ServiceNow. But they have self-guided learning paths that you can do, and they have live classes that you can attend.
Okay.
The live classes do cost a lot.
Yeah.
I would not encourage anyone. Hey, if you have it like that, do what you got to do.
Yeah.
But usually the people who take the live classes are those that are sponsored through their job, and the job, their job is paying for it. But they do have self-paced courses that you can take. And those are free.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Those are free. Now, once you get to the point of actually wanting to take the exam vouchers usually do cost, unless they're doing like a push like they did when I got in, that if you finish the course, they might offer, you know, a free exam voucher.
So between the self-paced course that you took, along with studying for your certification, how long was that process?
I would say in total, like the entire process, maybe about a year and a half.
Okay.
But I would say it probably took a little bit longer for me, because it took me a while to let go of the idea that I wasn't going to be in, you know, the animal, like dealing with animals anymore.
Sure. Yeah.
And I kind of prolonged it because I was, you know, working 12-hour shifts and then studying Life. After work. Yeah. But I think once I don't know, something just, I feel like it was really God that kind of like just was pushing me to do it. But I ended up quitting my job. So right when COVID hit, the CARES Act, they announced the changes that they made to the CARES Act, and they allow people to take money out of their 401k early without penalty. So I just really had a serious talk with myself, and I was like, I think this is what I want to do. So I took enough money out to last me a year. I quit my job and I gave myself a year to fully dedicate myself to learning what I wanted to learn about ServiceNow, gaining the certifications that I wanted and the skills. And I don't know how, but I got it done right before that money ran out.
Yeah. Hey, that's God. Timing. That's perfect. Yeah. That's perfect. Divine intervention, timing, like everything worked out in your favor. That's beautiful. That's very beautiful. What would you recommend for anyone who's listening to our conversation and they're hearing you talk about ServiceNow and how you made that transition? What are your like best study techniques, like when you're prepping for that thing?
Prepping for exams or just trying to like figure out what I wanted to do?
No, when you were actually getting ready to take that exam, what were your best study techniques?
That took me a while to be. I'm not the best study. Like I don't have a good study skill, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, that's good.
And it kind of took me a while to figure out like what works for me. What I did is that I would find really good exam dumps. So I would find versions of previous exams and I would look at the questions and I would try to answer the questions on my own and then go back and see where I messed up at or what questions where was I getting wrong. And those were my keys of what I needed to then take and go study. So, you know, if I kept getting questions wrong about form configuration, you know, or questions that were more geared towards ITSM, then I would take a step back and let me go to YouTube and let me find videos that are centered around ITSM or form configuration or email notifications or inbound email actions or whatever it was that I got wrong on that question. And then I would find more visual representations of that. Because for me, I learn easier by doing.
Okay.
Like if I read something, it's like I'll take it in and I can memorize it, but then where I mess up is that if you change it in any way and I only like memorized it, I'm in a bad place then. So I need to like go and see somebody like walking through it, doing it, talking me through it so that I can combine like what I read and connecting it to something. Because once those words mean something to me, I can regurgitate it in different ways.
Yeah.
So I relied heavily on YouTube. I relied on honestly digging through Twitter and reading people's tweets, just talking about different stuff. And that I kind of pieced all that together to study.
Yeah. And I think just really quickly, I think studying, cause I'm in Salesforce, so I'm on Salesforce side. And of course, you know, Salesforce versus ServiceNow, two totally different softwares, but both very, very important to businesses, right? Corporate, nonprofit, education, whatever. But a lot of what you said, I can resonate with, because when it comes to studying for tech certifications, it's really about knowing your learning style and actually not being afraid to try. Like, I think it's dope that you went on Twitter and you just immersed yourself in different conversations and whatnot. Like, most people wouldn't even think of that. So I think that's like a excellent, like, hidden key to like being able to immerse yourself in whatever technology you're studying. Cause literally, you know, whether it's programming, it's coding, it's data analytics, it's ServiceNow, it's Salesforce, it doesn't matter what you are studying or hoping to transition into for tech. It's like learning a foreign language. So you have to get used to it. You have to take time. I love how you said, hey, I quit my job. I took a year and a half. I know for me to get in the Salesforce, even transitioning from what I was doing as a data analyst to what I'm doing now as a Salesforce administrator, like probably took me 6 months to make that transition. But I let go of a very profitable side hustle. I was selling cars, getting full commission. And like, I'd been doing it for 6 years. So I was making good extra money besides being an educator. I was working on becoming a principal. And I dropped out during COVID. I dropped out of that program. So I turned down, you know, some pretty serious potential bucks to make this transition to tech. And kind of similar to what you're saying, Ryan, is, you know, I wanted more for myself. And for me, a little bit different is just, you know, I felt like I'd reached what I could reach as far as education is concerned. And I didn't want to be a principal. Like I just didn't. I changed my mind. So.
Cool how many things we have in common. Cause I got to that same point as well. Cause I was really like trying to figure out all of my options, you know, within the veterinary scope. And at the time, my manager, she kind of knew I was itching to, you know, get out, or I just wasn't happy. And they tried to kind of push me along the path of being a manager, like managing hospitals. Yeah. And I kind of was doing that, but a little bit into the training, I'm just like, I don't think I want to do that. You know, when you're responsible for managing an entire hospital, your off days aren't off days. Right. You know, like if somebody calls,
you're on call 24/7.
You're on call. Like you have to pick up the slack.
Same thing as a principal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was like, I don't know if I want that. I sit back and I imagine my life and what I see it as and me being happy, it didn't involve like always being accessible to my job. Mm-hmm. And when I would see people talk about tech and just the work-life balance, I'm like, boundaries. Yeah, that's what I want. And that even me wanting that kind of shifted what area of tech I even decided to get into and how I, you know, finally decided like, okay, I want to do service now. And maybe I won't do this sector of service now because I kind of lean more towards the always going, just give me my work. Let me put my head down, leave me alone. And when I'm done, I'm done. That's that's what I wanted. So
fire. If there's one thing you can change about your current role, what would you change?
Oh goodness. One thing I could change. The only thing that's coming to my mind is very nitpicky.
Okay.
But so with being a consultant, you know, I'm staffed to be on a lot of different projects at the same time. Mm-hmm. That's one of the main differences for working for like a consulting agency. I provide services, not just for one client. So I'm usually bouncing from this project to that project to this project. And sometimes it can be a little difficult to switch gears.
Sure.
You know,
I get that.
Project because you learn one client and they like this done this way, and then this client doesn't want you to do that. They want you to do it this way, and it's just a constant switching gears. Sometimes that can be a little mentally draining. But other times it's exciting. The one thing I would change about that is sometimes the structure of how they staff these projects. So we have, so I'm just a technical consultant, just a junior technical consultant, like just to simplify it. And on these projects, they usually staff a senior technical consultant. And then you have your principal technical consultant who usually like leads the project from the technical side. And then we have our project managers who kind of handle the client and just facilitate everything moving smoothly. But sometimes they will swap out a principal technical consultant, which is like our tech lead, with a business analyst.
Okay.
And that can cause a lot of hiccups. They're the person writing the stories, writing the acceptance criteria.
Right.
Like, you know, me as a junior person, I'm still very much at a point where I'm second guessing myself. Like, I'm becoming more confident, and I'm realizing what I can do.
Yeah.
But I like, just tell me what you want me to do exactly, and I can do it. And so when you have a principal technical consultant or somebody who's technical, they will tell you, like, go to this specific business rule and add this line of code or tweak this client script or do this UI policy. But when you have a business analyst, they lay it out in a process way. Like, this is what we needed to do. This is what I want it to look like.
Right.
And even though it's like, I don't want to say I completely want to change it, because I welcome challenges. Because challenges like cause you to grow.
Yeah.
And they push me to have to think, because now you're not telling me exactly what it is that you want me to do. You're telling me the end, the outcome. And now I have to sit and I have to figure it out and I have to think. But then now I'm like anxiety ridden, because what if the way that I decide to put this together technically isn't best practice, or isn't the best way, that I just don't know yet because I'm still new. I'm only 2 years into this at this point.
Yeah.
So that would be the one thing I wish, like, if you know it's like a junior on the team, to always pair me with somebody more senior. So I'm not put in that position to make like guesses like that. But otherwise, I like the job. It's pretty cool.
All right. So you brought up a really, really interesting point, and I didn't plan this question at all. And this is a conversation. This is not a formal interview or anything like that. We're just vibing. Imposter syndrome. People talk about that so much in tech, and I'm sure it exists in every industry. Like, I have a good friend who, well, he's been a lawyer a few years now, but he spoke to me about imposter syndrome before. Could you speak, you kind of already have, but could you speak to that more explicitly? Like, when was the first time you dealt with imposter syndrome, and how did you overcome it? Or if you haven't officially overcome it yet, like, what are some of the things that you have done to kind of protect yourself against it and to make, you know, continue to grow and progress in your role, in your career?
Oh, goodness. Whew. Imposter syndrome has been there since the beginning. You know, even like making the commitment to, I want to be in tech. Because somebody who was not a part of this field in the first place, or none of my background education had anything to do with tech. And when you're outside looking in, you know, if I can be blunt, I always thought this was a space for extremely smart white and Asian men. Yeah. Like, who am I as a Black woman with no formal education, nothing? Like, who am I to even think I'm about to get into tech? You know, first off, who are you?
Right.
But my confidence slowly started to build when I, like, let me find people who look like me, who are doing this. Let me find people who seem to think like me, who seem to have come from the same walk of life as me, and I'm watching them do it and just following them and seeing them talk about it day to day. I'm like, okay, this is not just a white and Asian man's, you know, playground. There's space for me here too, because I see it. So that kind of helped. I've definitely not overcome it. I look at it more as a daily battle. You know, some days she'll win. Some days she gets some good jabs in. And other days I'm like, okay, I got her this time. but it's tough. It truly is a daily thing. And it pops up a lot. And I think, you know, there's different layers to it. A, me being a Black woman in a space where it wasn't initially, you know, welcoming for people who look like me to be a career switcher. I just find myself second guessing myself a lot. And I think sometimes I just have to remind myself, like, I know how you're feeling right now. You're scared, you're intimidated, but step back and look at what you're doing. Right. Look at where you've come from. You know, before I got into this, I couldn't write a line of code to save my life. But now I can type up a client script or a business rule, you know, super quick. And even though I have so much further to go, just stepping back and be like, girl, look at what you're doing.
Look at
like,
the progress.
You've come so far, you know, and the things that are difficult to you now, like, were things you wouldn't even fathom yourself doing. So I think it's just the daily reminding myself of, you know, like, you can do whatever you set your mind to. Like, you just need to sit down, focus, do it, and to step back and look at the progress. Because sometimes the beauty is in the journey, not necessarily the end point. And even if I can't do it right now, it's the fact that I challenged myself to sit, look at, you know, look it up, research it, and figure it out. Like, the beauty's in the journey is not the end point. And sometimes that is what helps me overcome imposter syndrome that day. Now, she might get me the next day.
But I'll be back though. I'll be back. I'll see you Wednesday. I'll be back. I love that. I love that answer. All right. One final question for those listening, whether they're an educator, they're Black, they're brown, they're white, they're Asian, whatever. They're a woman, they're a man, they're whatever. What recommendation or resource would you have for them as they're listening and they're doing their Google research and they're doing YouTube University? And so they know a little bit about ServiceNow. They want to transition into tech. What advice would you have for them?
Oh, goodness. So it's two pieces that's coming to my mind. The first thing is, always, always look for free resources, because they are out there, and sometimes they're not openly advertised. I think sometimes with social media, we're so used to instant gratification that, like, if it's not the first three searches on your Google search, oh, it's not there. You know, if it's not like blatantly, here's a free ServiceNow resource, we kind of just overlook it. But to really, like, dig and look, network, talk to people. And even if you're afraid to actually, like, engage in dialogue with people, because Twitter can be intimidating. Like, we're even going to get into, you know, egos and personalities on, you know, Twitter. So it can be super intimidating to message somebody. Just read, you know, dig through their tweets if you have to.
What can I say? Mamba out.
Thank you for listening to the Black Scholars Podcast. For more information, sometimes go to blackscholarspublishing.com.
You just gotta
go.
You will never know what you could ever be. If you never try, you will never see. Stayed in Africa, we ain't never leave. So one no slaves in our history. One no slave ships.